document, certain amendments are discussed that we proposed as a result of the consultation process that did take place. So without further ado, I'm going to go through the bill. There is a document that was distributed to note all the persons in the document. Regarding the consultations that took place, there is suggestions made on aspects that we need to address. We did try to accommodate some of the suggestions that were made. Others we did not take into account for reasons that were stipulated in the discussion document. I'm not going to refer to the summary of comments and responses there too, but I'll proceed on the basis that we did consider everything that the committee received, and after evaluation of all that information, we try to address any shortcomings in the bill. So, the first comment or amendment that was proposed relate to the definition of access. Access in the bill relates to access as contemplated in Chapter 5. That is the powers that would be used to access, search and seize devices. There was a comment from the South African Human Rights Commission that a phrase in that definition without limitation is very vague. And it's our submission that phrase without limitation is very necessary in the definition of access, due to the fact that we don't want a restricted interpretation on the powers of police to access articles and search and seize. So we did not accommodate that specific comment. The next comment relates to the definition of article. That's on page 10 of this document, if it was circulated. And that emanated from the Western Cape. The footnote is on page 11. And they had a problem with the use of article, which is defined in the definition of article. And they requested us to insert the words the same means. We did make provision for such a proposal on page 11, but we also proposed another option of how this definition can be redrafted without using the word article again. On the bottom of page 11 of this document, we do point out that there is a mistake, or rather a printing error in the Bulwark process, and that the words at the end of the definition of computer should be used as a separate sentence. The words that are related to, connected, or used with such a device. We didn't receive much. Well, there were some comments on the definition of computer that is currently contained in the bill. And I believe that maybe MTN and the service providers, did indicate that the definition of computer is not completely in line with the international position. The definition that is currently in the bill is in line with the SADC model law, but it's our submission that it should be amended. And we did propose on page 12 a new option of a computer. I want to explain the definition of a computer. A computer per se is mainly a device that do calculations in simple terms. And it is our submission that a reference to input devices, output devices, processing devices, other equipment and devices that are connected to or related to a computer should not be in the definition of a computer. proposed that the reference to all that ancillary components be omitted from the definition of computer. That would bring it in line with various other laws, model laws, even laws that was, amongst others, enacted in the Africa continent, where they also did not strictly follow the SADC model law. Amendment that is proposed to put before the committee for consideration is on page 13 of the discussion document. Last week or the last time we were in the committee on the chairperson, the Honourable Deputy Minister she requested us to look at the definition of cybercraft for purposes of the law. We did discuss previously that such a definition is not strictly necessary for the law. And we did also previously refer to other legislation in other countries where cybercraft is not specifically discussed or defined. For purposes of the law, cybercrime will include all the offences in Chapter 2, as well as the offences of Sections 16, 17 and 18 of the law that deals with malicious communication. And it's not necessary to define it in the law. To accommodate the request, we did propose a definition of cybercrime at the bottom of page 30, where we do refer to the fact that it includes offences in Chapter 2, as well as the malicious communication offences, and also the other offence, which is the war committed by means of a computer system. But again, our position will be that it's strictly necessary to define cybercrime for purposes of the law. On page 14 is a discussion of the definition of cybersecurity. We also request them to look at the possible definition of cybersecurity. And it's our submission that it's not necessary to insert the definition of cybersecurity in the bill. Cybersecurity is a science that's changing all the time. I do refer to an article on academics that tried to work out comprehensive definition of cybersecurity. That is by the authors Dan Cragen, Danny Purse et al. And they give a very vague definition of cybersecurity, which is not very conducive for interpretation purposes in the bill. We also did previously discuss, giving the comment and responses there to what cybersecurity entails. It's summarized again on page 14 to 15 of the document. I'm not going to refer to or discuss that in detail, but our submission is that all the necessary elements of cybersecurity is catered for in the bill in any case, but we do not need to define cybersecurity. On page 15, of the discussion document, there's a reference to the definition of data, and when the National Prosecuting Authority briefed the committee previously, they criticized the bill for not referring to subscriber data. That was mainly data that relates to the subject that used electronic communications. So it's a mission that the bill do not need to refer to or define subscriber data or subscriber information. Currently, in terms of South African law, if the law enforcement agencies want to obtain subscriber information, there's other laws that provide for that, amongst others the RICA. There's a specific provision in the RICA, Section 19 provides for obtaining of archive communication related information. There's also provisions in Section 39 and 40 of the RICA that give the police the authority to approach service providers to obtain subscriber information from them. There's also a section 205 of the Criminal Procedure Act that can be used to obtain subscriber information. Although the law does not concentrate on the price, does not concentrate or include specifically subscriber data in Chapter 5, Clause 42 may be used under certain circumstances to obtain subscriber data. And if one looked at Chapter 5 of the bill that deals with mutual legal assistance, the designated judge has powers in terms of that.
We now correct Mr. Mylan has gone out, he's coming back. So now we know that proceed. Welcome, Mr. Adolfi.
Thank you, Mr. Clause 4366 of the bill will provide that the designated judge may issue certain orders which may include the obtaining of archive communication related information. It therefore is initial that it is not necessary to deal with this bill with subscriber information. On page 15 of this document, there is a new inserted definition of electronic communication identity number. That is very relevant to malicious communications in Chapter 3 of the bill. There's a mission from the department side, as we acknowledge that it must be included. But when I deal with malicious communication, I will make a suggestion that it rather be inserted in the specific chapter to which it relates. On page 16 of this document, there's a definition of financial institution. We did receive a request that this definition be amended since it referred to the Financial Service Board Act. The Financial Sector Regulation Act came into operation and repealed that act, so will be correct to refer to Financial Sector Regulation Act in the definition.
You want us to know the impact of the civil liability in respect of investigators, and the obvious advantage of
appointing an investigator as a peace officer is to ensure that you actually know who the persons or categories of persons are that qualify as investigators. To accommodate this proposal and in the schedule to the bill, is a proposed amendment to Section 334 of the Criminal Procedure Act, which deals with the appointment of peace officers. In terms of that section, the Minister of Justice may appoint certain persons to perform certain functions that is related to that of peace officers, but not limited thereto. But the amendment that we propose in the schedule to the bill, I will discuss that later and refer back to this definition again, was that it made for the appointment of forensic digital investigators. On page 80, there was a criticism that the National Strategic Intelligence Act was not defined, since we do refer to it more than once in the bill. So that is the reason why you have inserted that definition here. At the bottom of page 18, there is a definition that is very relevant to clause 2 of the bill that deals with the offence of access. And that relates to the output of data, output and output of a computer program. The court wants to propose that those two definitions be inserted in clause 2 of the bill. And that will actually render the clause, if you read rather clause 2 of the bill, if you read it now, it will make it more understandable. And if I discuss that offense, I will refer back to this proposal. On page 19, during the comment phase, there was a comment that the word public available data is actually incorrect grammatically, and that it should be publicly available data. We do accommodate that. That is on page 19, footnote 15. Going over to page 20, and going to refer to the definition of seize. Again, it's a proposal regarding grammatical correctness of a sentence. It's paragraph B of the definition of seize, where we inserted a comma after the word inaccessible. Well, that brings me to the end of the definitions chapter of the bill.
I find it strange that some drafters would put in a certain financial page 15, the financial institution means by 30, as defined by 31 of financial services board. You know, lawyers like to have all the help in front of them. Maybe it is a big moment. So you read this thing and then go and get on. That one refers you to another one in the form. Well, why can't everyone just exactly the same definition? You put it here. Why do you say you refer to another act? And another act refers to another one. And so on. And you
pass to another one. I'm just asking, why can't it just be given and be right? This is what we mean by that. That's the first thing. And I come to the question of, on page 17 again, I hear that you say, either the person who is not a member of Sabbath can pray. It specifically excludes South African police from ever being asked to investigate any matter. That's one of the explanation. And secondly, I'm not happy much about the definition of the declared peace officer. I don't see anything wrong in being an investigator, but I'm not saying you are wrong. I again come up with the peace officer in terms of Section 33 of Criminal Procedure Act, and the definition of a peace officer must go to another act, and I'm saying on the same breath. So there are 2 points as far as this page 17 investigator part. I think you got the 2 points. You understand the 2 points. Thank you. I agree with the page 19 on the publicity. I think I confirm that. Yeah, I think that's about all of my comments.
It doesn't have to be right or wrong. He's making proposals to us. We have to decide which option. So you as a committee, decide what your preference is and then take a decision. Let's take it.
I am just giving him a chance to
explain
so that we don't just throw it out.
No, you are right. You are right. Thanks for clarifying that. Honorable Leon.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I would just like to hear from the department there on page 12, the definition of computer. They say that option 1 is the preferred option, but I would like to know why, really. Because to my mind, the second option may be like a safety net option in terms of the development of devices in future which may not strictly be falling under the definition of computer, but also still be able to be used in the commission of a crime. But I would like the department's comment.
Mr. Robertson, Honorable Tapo, before you come. No procedure.
On page 13, Chairperson, the definition of a cyber crime in relation to subversion A and B. How is this related to other solutions to cyber attack? And again, a question out of curiosity. In terms of African Union Convention, out of 54 countries, only 15 are needed to ratify this for the convention to be implemented. How far now can you update us? Thank you.
I see the approach of the Commission do need a certain amount of signatories before the convention comes into operation. A certain time period, which I cannot recall currently, is needed after countries ratify that. But the last time I looked at the ratification position is that it's going to take a long time before the AU convention is going to come into operation. I'll provide specific answers to these questions when they come back again. I've noted that. Regarding the reference to the definition of cybercrime, and specifically paragraphs B and C of that definition, it's supposed to relate to cyber attacks. You requested how does these two clauses relate to cyber attacks specifically. A cyber attack is usually defined as some kind of attack against a computer system. Paragraph B is not per se, or cannot regard it as a cyber attack against a computer system, but obviously it is conduct that affects the corpus formant of the interest of other persons. So you can probably argue that it is an electronic attack on that attribute of the person. Regarding any offence, any other offence that was committed or facilitated by means of an article, my response later will be to the effect that, strictly speaking, C is not a cyber attack, but again, you can commit murder by means of a computer system by, amongst others, shutting down the life support system. Again, you can probably say it's a cyber attack against a person. But like indicated, it's not really necessary to define cyber crime. Regarding the reference, I can refer to Mr. Wong's question regarding the computer system. I think one of the main attributes of a computer is the fact that it is a device that performs certain operations, calculations, storage, and other operations. And if you talk about the input device, the mouse of a computer, I don't think it's very relevant to that specific attribute of a computer system. The same output devices is probably your screen that you look at. But it can be probably telecommunication networks, cables drawn from the computer system. Again, if you want to attack, let's say, the wires that runs from a computer, it's not strictly in the cyber domain. Something like malicious damage to property. You do not affect the processing functions of a computer or data created or computer programs that's running on a computer device. I believe during the consultation process, it was only the service providers that did refer to network virtualization. Again, if you talk about network virtualization, it's a virtual network that is created. You can do it on a single computer where you create five other computers that do separate functions. If you affect the functions of that virtual device, you actually affect either the virtual device itself, which can qualify as a computer, or the main computer that created such a virtual network machines and devices. But Mr. Wong has got a point to the effect that the bill currently aims to deal with all crimes that can be committed against the computer. The easiest way to get all the data from the computer is to take the laptop, smash it open, and pull out the hard drive, and then you're in possession of all the information that is on the computer. To an extent, that may cater for such a scenario, but technically it's suggested that if the device doesn't qualify as a device that performs a calculation or a scoring or a reading function, that it should not be regarded as a computer system. That is in line with the majority of legislation right through the world. I did refer to the fact that it was only the SADC model law that regards a computer as to extend to other devices. Even our neighbours Botswana stick to the narrow definition of computer. There is countries that don't define computer, amongst others the UK, Australia, New Zealand, due to the fact that what computers are now is probably not going to be the same what it's going to be in 5 years. Again, it relates to the processing function of the device, not any ancillary device that is coupled to the computer. So you probably can look at trying to extend it, not by virtue of the definition of the computer. If other offences need to be dealt with against a computer system that doesn't affect the processing function, it's probably better to create separate offences in that regard. Regarding the reference to, let me first deal with reference to the Financial Sector Regulation Act. The problem is when you deal with certain technical legislation that aims to regulate a specific happening, it's usually prudent to include reference to that act in the definition of either act. What the financial institution is going to be, if we kind of limit it in the definitions to this act, the problem is that it might be amended in terms of the establishing legislation, and then your definition is not in line with the establishing definition, which specifically relates to financial sector regulation, financial institutions. To keep it open and ensure that if new financial institutions is recognized in terms of that act, it will ipso facto, or rather how it will form part of your definition. So that is one way of dealing with the possible amendment that's going to take place in the near future. So my submission is you can actually list all the financial institution and definition to the cyber bill, but if that definition change in terms of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, you're going to have shortcomings in this act. Regarding the definition of investigator, firstly, the fact that persons are appointed as investigators, it ensures that they can participate in investigation to cybercrime. Police already have the powers to investigate search and seize. It's a constitutional function, but the ordinary person usually don't have that function. The definition of investigator will not exclude police to search and seize. It must be read to the other functions. They've got a general function to investigate cybercrime, but this current lack of capacity, we by means of the bill try to ensure that other people can assist the police with such an investigation. So we do not restrict the powers of the police to investigate cybercrime. They can still do it. It's their mandate. Regarding the questions with peace officers, in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, Section 324, the minister may appoint certain persons to perform the functions of peace officers as is the High Commissioner of the Prime Minister, Jack, provided for the Prime Minister, Jack, or any other function. To date, I think the category of persons that would be cleared to these offices probably exceed 40 or so categories. They were afforded various powers in terms of Section 334 to either investigate certain crimes or assist with the investigation of certain crimes. As such, it will not limit the powers of the police in any event or give to that people, in this case investigators, extraordinary powers. I must remember, in terms of the definition of investigator, investigator must always act under the control of the police official, so the police official will be responsible. Like I said, it's a proposal that we are making, and the advantages of declaring them as police officers ensure, amongst others, that you can regulate the qualifications. Because currently, in terms of 334, the Minister of Justice may make certain determinations as to requirements which must be adhered to before a person functions as a police officer. So you can regulate that. To explain, the police have powers to investigate all crimes, that includes cybercrime. And they will, in general, have the power and the authority to investigate cybercrime or any other crime. What we try to do here is to say that certain people who is not police can perform certain powers which the police can, in any event, due to the legislation, constitution, and everything else. The word not does not prohibit a police official to act as an investigator. They already have that power. This is just to say, people as appointed as investigators is private persons outside the police that can assist. Doesn't prohibit the police to act as an investigator.
No, what I wanted to further elaborate on this is that this doesn't exclude the police. We're saying that in the event that the police find themselves in a situation whereby they are not competent enough or don't have enough capacity to actually carry out an investigation in that terrain, they are not prohibited from calling somebody who is adequately qualified to assist them in carrying out that investigation. So in other words, the police will still be there in that environment to see to this that relevant information. So the experts, people who are well trained in forensics or computer science and so forth, can be involved. And when it says who is not a member of police. Obviously, those experts will be experts in their own right, but not necessarily being members of the South African police. Create an offence that will provide for the criminalisation of acquiring and use of personal and financial information to commit offences. So on page 21 up to page 22 is the new offence, and it provides first that if a person acquires, possesses or provides to another person personal information.
Just wait there. I think I made a mistake. I should have introduced a new quality secretary, a very capable young person, Siabamkema Tojen, that young man there. Is our committee secretary. You remember we had two committee secretaries, and then the other one was taken away. So he must sit here. So we shouldn't treat him like he's a messenger in the committee. He's a full committee secretary and sit here and do his work as a committee secretary. We generally call him Sia, a very humble young man. He agrees to do any humble job, very efficient. He is the committee secretary and the second responsible for correction. But, yes. You are most welcome. The committee members know you, and you have never let us down during our work, and so we are very happy to have you as a good committee secretary. Honorable Lehon.
Chair, I just want to say this is the first reshuffle that really makes
recognition of talent and promotion of young people who are capable. So welcome, Sia. Okay, proceed.
Any more questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. currently dealing with chapter 2, the cybercrimes. I did indicate that there was a request that we do deal with personal and financial or related information offences. On page 21 to 22, there's a proposal that the offence be inserted that deals with acquiring, possession, or provision to another person of personal financial information to commit an offence. And we also deal with the effect of possessing personal financial information to commit an offence without the ability to give a reasonable explanation, which is very similar to section 36 of the General Income Act that deals with the possession of suspected stolen property. And we also define personal and financial information on page 32. And we said that personal information is personal information as is defined in the protection of the Personal Information Act. And financial information means any unique identifier that is being assigned to a person by a financial institution that enables a person to access funds, credit, or other financial benefits. I must point out that various countries do criminalise personal and financial related information offences. This was a clause that was previous in the consultation bill. It was however taken out due to the fact that OPIA aims to comprehensively protect personal information. On the other hand, the financial information related information is also protected for PR. There is a clause that criminalise that, but it has got certain shortcomings. And I really refer to the fact that various countries do aim to criminalise these offences. Option 2 is another option, but that only deals with financial information-related offences that is being criminalised, and it's very similar to the offence which I already explained to you. So it cuts away the personal information part, only deals with financial information-related offences. And it carries on up to page 24. In the footnote I do discuss the fact that financial-related information offences can, by implication, be covered by clause 7 of the law that deals with password and access code related offences. But the ambit of clause 7 of the law is rather restricted to offences that is further provided for in chapter 2. So if I steal the credit card number of somebody and I use it to commit real world fraud, will not be catered for in clause 7 of the bill. So that is the two options before the committee. I'm going to move ahead to page 25. That relates to
worries me a bit is that if one looks at these two versions, one specifically say that the acquiring of this information must be through the means of cyber activities? So unless I'm not seeing it or misreading it, it seems to me this to an extent so broad that it is actually a codification of even common law. Say, and I just want the department to comment whether that's intentional or whether they maybe feel that it could be further clarified or narrowed by also dealing specifically that you might get this personal information or financial information through by means of cyber.
But lawyers always say cyber and other related means. Can you explain, for instance?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. It was intentionally left neutral due to the fact that information that is acquired in the real world can be used to commit offences in cyberspace. I think this clause specifically says that the acquiring, possession, provide, the use of this information is limited to commit offences in terms of this Act.
If I understand honourable law, the definition is not somebody would use other means to acquire the information.
Say, I didn't, my act doesn't fall within the definition of the law. So why don't you craft it in such a way that the definition is wide enough?
Mr. Chairperson, I think it's wide enough. Like I said, it was neutral. It did not specify the means how to acquire that information. So you do not need to hack into the server of Standard Bank to obtain financial information. You can inter alia pick up the account number on the pavement. If you use it to commit an offence in terms of this Act, both scenarios will be covered. Questions in any event, and then carry on. Yeah. It's a very valid question. Just so,
regarding personal information, related offences, and financial information that can be used with the offence. My submission and my interpretation of the POPIA is that the POPIA does not adequately criminalise the protection of the personal information. It tries to deal with administrative offences to ensure that persons comply with the POPIA. And that's it. That's the end of the Act. And my submission is that will not help to criminalise the conduct of the hacker down those important home affairs database without an account number on it. And obviously, the use of that information to commit fraud, other irregularities, things to meet. But like I said, it was proposed by the department in the original bill that was sent out to public comment that this be criminalized. We did receive a lot of adverse comments criminalization of the use and distribution of personal information, and most of the commentaries are of the opinion that POPIA adequately deals with that. That was the reason why it was taken out. I did refer to when I started to discuss the offence, I did mention that a lot of other countries actually do criminalize specifically financial information related offences rather than financial information. But the Protection of Personal Information Act is usually applicable to personal information. I recall from memory the UK the UK legislation that deals with the protection of personal information do have an offence. If such personal information is distributed irregularly, which is not an administrative offence. If I can look from memory, I think if you look at Australia, it's approximately similar to the position in the UK. So there's countries that, to an extent, do recognise that the use of personal information specifically should be recognized as something that may be protected by criminal sanction if it's used for committing offences. Okay, I'm going to proceed with unlawful seclusion of access. Start on page 24. On page 25, the word data pertaining to output and then data, that word must be removed because of this group. And I indicated when I discussed the definitions that the definitions of output of data and output of a computer system should probably be inserted in the current clause 2. Then on page 26 I do discuss a new option that was again proposed by cellular operators during the parliamentary process. The request it has that we must try to adapt the offence to such an extent that it is in line with the international trend, amongst others that of the SADC law, other law laws, other conventions, and also including the Budapest Convention. And on page 27, we do provide for the national acceptable prescription of access, but that prescription is where a person unlawfully intentionally overcome measures that is there to secure access to the computer and thereafter access a computer system, and that is the international prescription. I do point out that there are certain shortcomings of that international accepted definition, amongst others. First, you must overcome a protection measure. These computers are not protected. Protection measure may include the password. Not many people people have to pass it. So it's a shortcoming in the international situation. And I previously indicated that we followed the UK Computer Misuse Act in formulating this crime, due to the fact that it is wider and to provide for this inadequacy of the international prescription. However, during the whole consultation process, the Bill Youth Committee do follow the recommendation that the Budapest prescription must be followed. We must provide for a definition, or rather explain further in this clause what amounts to access. And on page 27, I do propose the option which is in line with the current prescription of access. And on page 28, there is a definition of protection measures. And then I also do provide probably for the insertion of definition of output of a computer program or output of computer data in the prescription. So that's mainly the two options before the committee. One hand is the broad form of UK-based securing access or the international trend, which is quite narrowly and requires overcoming of security measures so you can commit the offence. What is important, which I want to point out, is that on page 29, when we deal with unauthorized access, we do not, as the current clause, limit unlawfulness to any unauthorized conduct. Just merely provide that the person whose conduct exceeds his lawful authority, in that instance, his conduct must be regarded as unlawful and leave it open to the court to apply other measures which can, if so factor, be regarded as to taint the conduct of unlawfulness. Page 29, that relates to the offence of unlawful acquiring of data. Again, it was the service providers that requested the committee to follow the international route and to enact a prescription that's in line with the international position. The department did try to accommodate that on page 30, and under option 1, we deal with unlawful interception of data. In terms of this prescription, a person who unlawfully intentionally intercepts data that is transmitted to, from, or within a computer system is guilty of an offence. However, we do provide in that option for the additional offences of possession of data to commit an offence, which is not part of the national general recognized prescription. And we also do cater on page 31 for an offence where a person cannot give a reasonable explanation of his possession of data that was unlawfully intercepted. And on page 31, the proposed subclause 4, we do define perception of data. An important aspect which I want to bring to the committee's attention is that the international prescription refers to perception of data which include electric magnetic emissions from a computer system carrying data. On the first sight, it seems to be absent from the offence that is currently in the bill. Our submission that the offence that is in the principle is broad enough to cater for this electromagnetic emission from a computer system. And just provide
are lawfully in a manner which will include the election of their commissions for the different offence. Do you see a frequency that's emitted from a computer device and you can use other apparatus to decode it and actually obtain the message which is being transmitted? Okay. To take the committee to the sense of unlawful acts in respect of a software and hardware tool. There is a proposal on page 32 where we want to address concerns that was raised during the public consultation process. It was raised before the bill was even developed, the first bill that gave rise to this bill. That is that security experts need those hardware and software tools in order to do their daily work. And so their concern is that clause 4.1 may criminalize certain conduct that is applicable to them. So to address this concern, we propose that subsection 1 be deleted. The current subsection 2 be amended to provide that any person who uses or possesses these hardware and software tools to commit an offence as provided for the bill is guilty of an offence. So that will accommodate that criticism against the bill. Page 33 is a small amendment to the definition of a software or hardware tool. Paragraph E, amongst others, provides that the software or hardware tool is a tool that is used to acquire, modify, provide, make available, copy, or use a clone, password, access code, or similar data or devices. And, we can take out the words modify, provide, make available, copy, as well as clone. Due to the fact that acquire or use is adequate and passes most of the other actions that is described in the definition in paragraph E. Regarding the other offences, we didn't actually see a lot of comment or any criticism against them. That is up to the offence of cyber fraud, which is on page 36 of this document.
Yeah. depend on B access. So in other words, you now make a distinction with a person who actually overcome and somebody who doesn't have to do that, but who is intentionally and unlawfully accept. If you understand what I'm saying, you make a distinction between the two, but you cover what you wanted to cover. And A, you also make provision for people who don't overcome, but who intend that in any way and they're not going to access data or program. I assume that you're referring to section 4 under the heading under 40 access to software or hardware tools. That is the case. You were saying you are deleting the 4.1. Any person who are looking at it, well, that's my impression. And you said in other words, you put another 4.1 for you. You are very are you saying that 4.1 here? You, which one are you removing? The one in the bill?
Well, it's the first subsection. 4.1. Option 1. Yeah. I mean, 4.1. That is the restriction that says person with single cell cell pitch, market download, advertising software, and office tools, the purpose of using a sensor is to search in the area of the tables of the board. That is the one in the. That's an option that's given to the committee. Consideration. Do you have different purposes for that? Yes, yes.
What would be the criticism?
Well, the criticism mainly relates to penetration testers and other people that work in the computer security industry. It's a factor, if you look at their conduct, what they do is that they're actually contravening the Act. Our argument is that such conduct is not unlawful, haven't been regarded as offences,
yeah.
They are very uncomfortable with this provision. And the opinion is that it is making rise to selective prosecutions. It's like when I advertise, let's say, Backtrack available for penetration testing. And such conduct, that advertisement, may actually be prosecuted in terms of section 4.1. Most of the devices we have has already got built-in security testing tools to see if you've got Linux in your computer, even Linux, use of Backtrack and Windows has got certain programs that can be used to fiddle with other devices. So that is the main concern. An excuse for selective prosecution, and that the police don't actually understand what its unlawfulness means in the context of this specific prohibition. That the police may, in their knowledge, actually arrest somebody who actually performed legitimate pen testing or possesses certain devices as a computer security expert. So they're extremely comfortable about that.
Sure. I would agree with you. I think the word unlawful, lawfully, in general, and unlawful, I don't understand they are. If you're saying I'm doing this because they may need to be policemen to ABCD and so on, and then therefore the act is almost came to according to the people who are suffering from that. I think I would agree with you to say it's not that long. Not that long.
Committee to decide. I must refer to legislation of other countries. I think those countries do criminalise the conduct that was in clause or is proposed in the current clause 4.1 in the bill. And look at Canada, look at Botswana, look at other legislation in Africa, look at America, look at Australia, as well as New Zealand, they all do criminalise the original option, original clause 4.1, the legislation. I'm going to continue with the other offences.
Before you continue,
what I wanted to add on in this case is that people in the industry, or the industry commentators, were more concerned about the broadness of section 4, subsection 1, where we initially included manufacturing as something that should be, you know, criminalized. And after that consultation, it was agreed that we should tone it down to limit it to only acquisition and usage for the purposes of committing a particular offense. So in the sense that when you use or acquire the software and the hardware and you use it unlawfully to endanger somebody's life or to defraud somebody's life, then it excludes the manufacturers who would in any case be in a lawful legal business of producing whatever product. Production of those products is not necessarily illegal. Is only if you acquire unlawfully and intentionally plan to actually go the illegal route that will actually make it illegal. So we in this option, we're turning it down to those people who will have unlawful intent of using this software and hardware tools to commit. Whereas in the past, it was so broad to include even manufacturers. And that was going to actually make them, I would say, in inverted commas, involved in criminal activity as well, because they would be branded as manufacturers of items or hardware, which is actually being linked to the commission of an offense. So by turning it down to any person who unlawfully and intentionally use or possess it, and it limited to that the user of or the person who may come into contact or in possession of that item and use it in a negative way.
I still don't understand. I'm a computer group and I want to manufacture a software with an intention. Of legal and intentional communication. I'm not covered. I didn't use it. I only become a computer when I use it. But if I manufacture, which I have, even if it's not, let's say, for argument's sake, I'm a hacker. I manufacture a software with an intention to hack. And I'm not covered.
The thing is that
limit the people's right to manufacture. They have the freedom to manufacture, but the moment you move to the second stage of using the product unlawfully and with intention to commit crime, then the law steps in. But should we stop people's right to manufacture goods that are useful to society for fear that later they may be used by criminals? So we will stop people from manufacturing knives and forks.
What I'm saying is that I'm just making an example, a good example of hacker. You manufacture a software specifically to hacker. You know, there is that software. I can make a software to hack into your computer specifically.
How will they know when you are still manufacturing that your intention is for hacking?
This particular, unlike making a knife or a gun. If I make a software, I make a software for a specific purpose. I don't make a software that can be used for any other thing.
But as lawmakers, how will we know that intention?
Let me put it this way. If I make I manufacture a gun, that the one that is banned now in America, that will allow a person to shoot about 100 bullets in 1 minute, something. Now, I manufacture a gun that specifically will do A, B, C, and D. Not just an ordinary gun. Now, if that gun, to make that gun that can kill people, that can shoot 100 bullets in 1 minute, then it is illegal because I intend, the intention is very clear. It's just like that. If you manufacture a software, I know about software, I don't know about hardware, but I know about software. And I can make a software that can hack into your computer. I can make a software without using it. I'm not talking about using it. It's specifically for that. It's not a general. It's specific for hacking. For hacking. That particular thing. So I think that I would still feel that the concern is unfounded, and I think our thought is not personal. I agree with you people when you say that there is not really as it is.
What advocate,
Raman?
No, I don't know if I understand advocate environment correctly. I will just tell you this.
I'm on page 32 and on page 8 in the bill. The original thing.
Oh, the original.
Yeah, the original, and even that, the original one was talking about the manufacturer. What they did, they said they confined it to usage now, not manufacturers for the national. In other words, they manufacture something for illegal people, as long as you personally did not use it. But if you manufacture something for illegal people, specifically, and it's used by somebody else, you are not caught. The person who is caught is the one who uses it in terms of this. And this is why I say, I think the original criminalization of the manufacturer of a specific particularized software to specifically hack on somebody.
Are we not dealing with the limits of what the law can and cannot do?
because there are lots of projects that can be made, which can be used for illegal purposes. Now, how do you as a lawmaker regulate this matter in such a way that you preempt the illegal usage? But let's hear the lawyers. What are you saying, Mr. Roberts?
I think to agree with the Honourable Mpuan that I think if we take away subsection 1 in its totality, you might be faced with a situation that even though somebody is busy crafting or developing a hacking system, he or she might not be guilty of an offence. But what I want to say is, I think there may be other ways in which to address the fears of those commented during the public hearing, and that's that if one moves away from just using the word unlawfully and intentionally possesses or manufactures and assembles, because the stress testing they were referring to is obviously justifiable. But they, I think, are agreed by only the words unlawfully and intentionally. So I think maybe one must look into just amending the wording there to the effect that if you do that without having the right to take to, so that you, for example, and I'm not really in favor of over-regulation, but to say that free agents cannot develop the software. They must have a contract with somebody to do the space mission. Otherwise, what you also get in practice, and I'm also not no real expert, I just only read and watch the movies, people who say we are hackers and then we come to you and say you must pay us to also develop the firewall or the counter mechanism. So the so-called free agent, and in that is a danger.
I still say for the key. It has to be with intention to act. When you are manufacturing or whether you are using it, it is intention to commit crime. Even if you are manufacturing with intention. Because if I'm making a gun, I'm not making it with intention to commit a crime. But if I manufacture it with intention to commit a crime, particularly on this term.
I think the counter argument is how will that intention be determined?
It's very clear on the question of in the form of this particular thing. But if in the software, for example, you make a software with intention, a particular software for typing. You make a software for script spreadsheet. You make a software for hacking. It's specific. You don't make a general which is for hacking and for other things. You know.
So it's really a question of how do we formulate the law in such a way that we outlaw people who manufacture these devices for the purpose of hacking.
There is no.
I don't disagree with you. What I'm saying is that we need to find a formulation which will cover the concern that you had. Maybe we should leave the matter there. Leave the expert against the understudy to relook at the formulation to cover the loophole that you have identified.
Yes, yes, yes. in software manufacturing, is always with a particular purpose. It's usually not dual purpose. Let me make an example of your type. If I'm making a software for white processing, it's specifically one, not for something else. If I make a software for spreadsheet or whatever, or database or whatever, it's specifically for that. But in hacking, it's specifically for penetrating somebody. And it's usually, if you are saying that to penetrate is illegal, if you do it intentionally, with an intention of hacking, illegally, legal intention of hacking, there is no other way that the manufacturer. In other words, I make a software for hacking. I sell it to other people. There is no other way they're going to do it. They're going to use it to hack.
Now you have made persuasive arguments. That's why I'm saying it is a question of the formulation, and that must be left to the expert. But I think you have persuaded us. Can we proceed?
On page 56, we have discussed the defense cyber fraud. The SAPS, the African Police Service, don't actually criticize the defense of cyber fraud, but they raised the question, why did we not criminalize other kind of common law offenses, to also include cyber elements? Our submission to that is that the few offences that is included in the bill, namely fraud, extortion, and forging and uttering, many offences that is recognised universally as certain offences that can primarily be committed by ways of the computer system, and that is why we included that specific offence. Because it's everybody else recognizes it, so it's a good idea if we recognize it. I must point out that the offenses in clause 8, 9, and 10, that's on a static loop, differs from the common law counterparts. I did explain it comprehensively in a footnote to that subsection. That section. I'm not going to go through it, but let's take for instance cyber fraud. It's usually a misrepresentation made to somebody else and to the prejudice of somebody else. So a misrepresentation would qualify as a computer program that actually takes your money away from you as soon as you type in the password and deposit it. Perpetrate this account, probably not. It's not a misrepresentation. So we need to adapt these offences to cater for shortcomings in our common law. They actually recognize in our common law, amongst others, that fraud is very wide. It can be committed by a computer system, but the true extent of that has not yet been defined. And we try to define it in the bill. So we extend fraud misrepresentations made by traditional means, like the bottom message, like the second, but also includes if it's made by a computer system, also misrepresentation that result as of interference to a computer system or other device. So we expand on the common law offenses, and that applies to the other offenses of cyber forging, actually, as well as cyber extortion. So our response to the comments of the South African Police Service is that it is not necessary to define each and every other offence that is on the statute book to include some kind of component that is cyber in nature. So that should be their argument. And with regard
to the offence of fraud, page 37, there's two amendments that we do propose. In clause 8D, there's a reference to subsection 5.2 and 6.2. We want to limit it to paragraph 8 that deals with lead data, computer program. Paragraph B that deals with also computer program, and then paragraph E that deals with interference with modern use of data or the computer program. The other paragraph in subsection 5.2 is not applicable to the offence of fraud, but also in respect of the reference. 8B, section 2, does it mention that it should be limited only to section 6.2A. That is conduct that's primarily used inside of fraud, and not all the others, other conduct which is described in section 6.2A. Okay, then I'm going to skip forward to page 39, when we deal with aggravated offences. We do not receive much comment on these offences, but we did revise it in any case. And on page 39, clause 11.1a, we inserted a specific knowledge or intention requirement in a clause before you can commit that offence. Not extortion, it's aggravated offences. This is where specific conduct prescribed in the bill, mainly interference with the computer system, password access codes, offences, and interference with devices is committed against a restricted computer system. The restricted computer system is defined later on, which mainly includes critical information infrastructure. And when we say the person is guilty of an offence, it's my submission that we should include a specific knowledge or intention requirement in this clause to ensure that before we can prosecute a person or find him guilty of such an offence, the person who committed the offence ought to have known or ought to have foreseen that he is going to destroy a restricted computer device. So that is a kind of safeguard we want to build into the aggravated namely a specific knowledge or requirement before a person can be committed of such an offence. Currently you get on the statute group robbery with aggravated circumstances, and in terms of law, you just commit robbery, and aggravated circumstances is usually present when you use a weapon. We do not deal with this as part of a sentencing requirement, but we want it to be inserted as a specific element of the crime which must be proved before a person can be convicted of such an offence. And then paragraph B, where we define restricted computer system, the current clause in the bill, clause 11.1b at the bottom of page 39, refers to a financial institution and then used the constitutional, the constitution reference to an organ of the state. Say that anything that falls within that definition is a restricted computer system. And it's our submission that that is too broad. If you look at section 229 of the Constitution, you'll find out that it includes local municipal library. Obviously, it's our submission that the local municipal library should not be considered as a restricted system. So in respect of that definition, we requested that that whole reference to all of the state
state be taken out of that definition, and that if a woman of the state needs to be protected, he or she must be declared critical information infrastructure in terms of chapter 11 of the book. It's a proposal that's put forward to kind of ensure that persons that access the local library do not charge excessive severe offences.
How long are we going to take to deal with that dispute? And how much assistance do we need from experts other than ourselves? Because we may be addressing things that are beyond us, which means that this committee for the whole year will only be debating things that don't fall within our competence. How much?
We can probably go through this bill if you get 4 days in a row for the committee to kind of make a decision on it. But a certain expertise is required to understand this bill and the effect it's going to have. There's people that is probably available that can assist the committee in evaluating this bill. I must point out that my expertise on the subject in South Africa is almost non-existent. Even the people that were appointed to finally evaluate the bill, I will not regard them as highly experts. There's probably two or three real forensic investigators that can give you input from the investigator's side of the matter. But regarding criminalization of offenses in cyberspace, I don't think there's actually any real person that can be of assistance in this regard.
You know, I'm trying to avoid a situation where we would be interrogating you on matters that don't fall within your competence. And if we want to legislate on these matters, we must have identified challenges, and there must be people who have the competence to help us understand those challenges and deal with them. So I'm just seeking the guidance of the honorable members to say what do we want to do, because I think Honorable Minister Robertson and Mr. Mangena are doing the best within their competence, and we may be asking them to do something else that we are looking for, which is not what falls within their competence. Honorable Hall.
Yeah, Chair, I don't disagree. There's just another factor which I think we must also bear in mind, and that's that my belief was, and you must correct me if I'm wrong, that while this was to be dealt with primarily by us, both the EC of Police and Postal and Telecommunications also, to an extent, would have been involved at some stage. So in our planning, whether we then go the route of also obtaining outside expertise, one must just also bear in mind that I don't know whether they've been briefed and whether they have a parallel process and whether joint committee meetings at some stage is envisaged, or what the situation is?
Personally, I think the only thing that I see as technicality is understand how fraud crime is called. But to define how it becomes a crime is not complicated. You will be unable to understand. Let me put it this way. You may not know how acting is, but it doesn't mean that you may not legislate against acting as a lawyer. What I'm trying to say here is that the bill doesn't necessarily need that particular aspect. What is important here is the instances, what actually happens, how is this crime committed. That is the slight point that is involved. Do you, as we have discussed here, do you commit a crime by manufacturing? I'm saying that if that portion on the question, but not necessarily that we can, I don't know what expert perhaps wants for that. I think we can ask the question of a person who uses a computer in the IT that takes you to how do you make a software, but I like say personally, the knowledge I have is the knowledge of the society here and there, and also of opposite.
I don't disagree with you, but maybe we should persuade what Honorable Hans says, whether or not we before we finalize other committees that may be relevant, so that we also don't try to do things that are beyond our competence. Honorable Lutap, and then we'll not be your problem.
Yeah. Yeah, no, thanks, Honorable Chair. I want to agree with you and what also Honorable Hall and Honorable Mutapo said. Because the visibility appears to be too technical. While we're dealing with the legal part of it, but as you go trying to eat the true technology, I think we need to be also quite converted with it, just to avoid leaving loopholes. Because in ourselves, we're focusing more on the legal part, what says the law on it, how can you avoid it. But then you would also need for that technical knowledge, because this is not just about cyber, it's about technical. So we also need, I think, thorough knowledge about that. So I would agree that if we can get experts and have conversations with them just to get the inner understanding, and also, but also to have a session with these other relevant committees that are dealing with the communication. I think that would assist. Because I think my analysis is that we are moving very slowly. Of the complexities, maybe, I don't know. Because in the hierarchy, we have been dealing with this in November. So I was dealing with this. Every time I get an invitation, say, hi, my client. So, you know, it's like my full-time job, but I'm dealing with everything. Yeah, yeah, so I think it's
something that needs to be done. Sorry, that you came from Tallinn and Desmond, too. I wonder who.
May I suggest that we have asked the people in the IT, because most of the things an ordinary IT expert can expect quite a number of, 2 hours. Now, I agree with the Honorable Horn that the other committees may be interested in such discussions that after we like, and police would like us to add one or two minutes. That I'm not agreeing. But I would think as far as technical, but an ordinary expert in the IT can be of very much assistance to clarify certain things. So I think facilitation, our problem is there of not understanding that. And I think that, I don't know what that day you were saying in the country, I don't know, but I say for the purpose of making of part of this bill, we probably could do with an IT person. I don't know, maybe you can suggest something else.
Maybe let's agree with the Honorable Skosana and Montana, and of course with this one, that we have a joint meeting with the sister portfolio committees, because we also don't want to reduce this thing to an IT operation. We want to make a law, and I think that those portfolio committees would have consulted with the experts in their own areas. So if we put our heads together with them, I think we can get nearer to what we need to do. Because otherwise, if we just bring ITs, and then we may get into dangerous space. Honorable one.
Jay, I'm not disagreeing. The only thing I want to say is that while we certainly know experts, we have come some way now with the bill, so it might be proper that they first, if they have not, receive certain briefings, because, not to be rude, but I don't want to come and sit here and then it's as if the wheel is reinvented from scratch. That's why I asked whether there's parallel processes where they have been briefed, whether at some stage we will have this joint sitting. I'm totally not against it. All I'm saying, for the sake of us and Mr. Roberts, they must be on a certain level of understanding before we have the joint meeting.
Mr. Roberts? I want to suggest something else. It's probably right to meet with the portfolio committee of police and some of the part of the DDPS. But I did compile extensive research document at the beginning legislation of substantial, well, legislation of other countries, a large amount were covered. In evaluating this bill, my submission is, if you take, for instance, a model law, and your bill is more or less in line with the model law, then it will be sufficient for South Africa to deal with cybercrime. I've got all the authorities and everything on a computer. I can summarize that and refer to the prescriptions and legislation of other countries. I think it's for the committee to find if it's adequate to deal with it on that basis. And South Africa criminalize offences, and the elements of that offences are substantially similar to what other countries regard as cybercrime. I think that's one way of dealing with it. Regarding the involvement of people in IT, IT can tell you how a computer works, how a program works, but it will probably not be able to tell you how do you act. They probably themselves won't know about security or penetration testing. Well, it's probably worth a shot to get somebody from the IT division to come and explain it, at least an IT expert.
No, we are not there. I think that
you have done the best, all that is humanly possible. My understanding is that there are other stakeholders this matter in terms of portfolio quality, that before this committee we finalize this, they will sit together with them and evaluate this thing together with sister portfolio committees, because we don't want to, as this committee, finalize the bill only to be told that you didn't take into account what the police are saying, what telecommunication are saying. Shouldn't we then find a joint meeting before we proceed? Otherwise, Honorable Sposana will be accused of having come to Parliament just to deal with cyber matters before we and that may be regarded as non-performance. I think we should advocate Raman, shouldn't we stop here? There is contact with the Foundation for Human Rights. We've worked with the South African Human Rights Committee on that. And there was the Land Heritage and Human Rights Forum led by Professor Quinton Jensen of Nelson Mandela University. Now, on the 27th and 28th March, they are having a workshop with other stakeholders. So, which means the 26th, it will be with the churches, 27th and 28th will be with other stakeholders. Now, the meeting will be at KIPPS, that is Gibson Institute for Business Leadership in Johannesburg. And now the department that would be relevant would be Rural Development and Land Reform, Environmental Affairs, Defense, Agriculture, the Land Claims Court, South African Human Rights Commission, the National Land Claims Commission, Culture Contralesa, National House of Traditional Leaders, South African Catholic Bishops Conference, SACC, and missionary societies that are still around. And then there is Freedom of Religion who are here. Yes. So I think that we cannot leave this matter to politics, because it's creating anxiety, because as politicians we make slogans, people want clarity. So this process, the 26th meeting and the 27th, 28th, would be to really unpack what are we saying on this matter that yesterday the National Assembly agreed that expropriation without compensation is the way, but what are the modalities? And the process of the 26th and 27th, 28th can deal with the modalities. And there's a tendency on government departments not to attend these processes or to send junior people. So Advocate Ramana and we have to coordinate these other departments
think we must agree with you. That's one area that we neglected. But all we are saying with this one, the dates are already set, the 26, 27, 28. So let's revisit our program and make sure that we prioritize the traditional possibility. But for today, I think okay. Yeah, speak out, advocate.
No, just to say that in terms of the program that we have situated, we are supposed to have advocated towards time. The 14th and the 20th of March. Even then, the week of the 26th, I think we can just check and talk about. We, in terms of the program, the suggestion of the was that we should have a workshop, but it was on the Land Restitution Act. So I think what the chairperson is saying is already related to what we are doing the program, so there are no major changes.
Just make the necessary adjustments, but otherwise we are in line. So can we say for today, honourable members, and
yes, I was saying that. I want to apologize personally.